We're continuing our discussion of disciplines of the Spirit, and today we are considering the discipline that is involved in achieving some measure of personal stability as preparation for our thinking. Will you listen to these two selections, paying very careful attention to the last part of each one of them? The first is from Matthew Arnold. Only, but this is rare. When a beloved hand is laid in ours, when jaded with rush and glare of the interminable hours, our eyes can in another's eye read clear, when our world-deafened ear is by the tones of a loved voice caressed, a bolt is shot back somewhere in our breast, and a lost pulse of feeling stirs again. The eye sinks inward, and the heart lies plain. And what we mean, we say, and what we would, we know. A man becomes aware of his life's flow, and hears its winding murmur, and he sees the meadows where it glides, the sun, the breeze, and there arise a lull in the hot race wherein he doth forever chase that flying and elusive shadow rest. An air of coolness plays upon his face, and an unwonted calm pervades his breast, and then he thinks he knows the hills where his life rose, and the sea where it goes. And then this. The great hunger today is for a conception of human destiny which has significance for individuals, which will give them something to work on, with a sense of individual meaning that is not continually being invaded and frustrated by the fundamentally irrelevant purposes of states and armies and navies and other historical or manifest destiny tasks. The men we most admire and revere have and have had this sense of meaning in their lives. It was so strong for them that they created an environment in which it could be realized or effectively pursued. Their lives are not shaped by the accidents of history, although circumstances may have given what they did its outward form. In any external environment, they would have made their mark. In any external environment, they would have made their mark. Of men of this sort, we can only say that they tapped intuitive resources that do not seem available to the ordinary run of mankind. But if we say this, we ought to say something about how those resources can be made available to mere individuals. What can a man do to get such inward moral conviction and sense of destiny for himself? This is the question that I will ask you, on which I will ask you to ponder after you leave the service. Personal stability may be defined as the experience through which an individual passes when he thinks he has that which is of most importance to him. When I think I have in my possession that which is most important to me, I have personal stability. Now, another definition may be Personal stability is morale, private morale. And by private morale, I mean belief in your own cause, whatever that cause may be. A man may be said to have personal morale when he believes in his own private enterprise. Now, personal stability is an achievement of the spirit. It rests sometimes upon the possession of things that are important to the individual, but the very existence of those things may be destructive to someone else. My personal stability may rest upon the degree to which I am able to render you unstable. That's what I mean. Olive Schreiner has a very interesting allegory about this. It's an allegory about hell. And I've read it to you sometime in these years that I've been reading. She noticed when she went to hell in this allegory that in the distance men were digging holes, but in the holes they didn't seem to put anything. They just dug the holes and then made a little breastwork of some sort over the holes, then covered that with dirt so that the hole wouldn't be there, except in fact. And she said to God, "What are they doing?" And God said, "They're digging holes." Well, why do they do this? They're digging these holes into which they think and hope that their fellows may sink. Well, why do they want their fellows to do this? Because, God said to her, these men think that they cannot rise unless their brother falls. And then she said, but God, are these men sane? And God said, oh no, we're not sane. There's no sane man in hell. Personal stability that rests on someone else's instability. Now this means, you see, something that is very searching, and it is not easy to arrive at a satisfactory working solution to the problem. For instance, your personal stability as an American may rest upon the stability that is dramatized in some of our utterances as the American way of life, for instance. But the American way of life, in one place, may be held secure in its place because its very presence guarantees the insecurity of everybody else, except those that are included in the stability itself. This is the problem with which the South is wrestling right now. to guarantee stability, which stability at the same time will be so extensive in character that it includes a wider and wider area of human beings. This is why personal stability ultimately rests upon something that is more than that which is private and intimate and personal. Sometimes personal stability rests upon something that's very trivial, like money. Of course, that money is important, but it's trivial, isn't it? I can hear someone saying, if you have it, it's trivial. So I'll say it for you so as to bring your minds back into focus. Now, if your private morale rests upon something that is trivial or something that the existence of which is in the hands of the ebb and flow of the order of things to guarantee, then the initiative over your own personal stability cannot conceivably be in your own hands, even in a limited way. I remember during the Depression, it must have been about 1932 or 3, I was invited to Buffalo, New York. Oh, I didn't mean to say where it was. Well, it's all right. I was invited to Buffalo, New York by the YWCA. And they asked me to spend a day holding an all-day retreat for about 200 women. These women had requested the YWCA to provide some moment, some experience for the deepening of their own sense of personal stability, that they may be able to tide their husbands over the great upheaval due to the collapse of the economic structure during that period. Men were committing suicide, jumping out of windows, doing all kinds of things, and there wasn't anything that could be done, except the wives felt that they, if they could get their hands on a deeper level, if they could touch some kind of resource that will start a flow in them that could float the anxieties of their husbands, this would give them some basis of stability that would hold until they themselves could catch their breath. Now, sometimes the personal stability rests upon your own self-confidence. It may be that life has been hard for you, that you have had to rest from stubborn and recalcitrant and unyielding hands just enough to hold you steady in your place, that you have developed an attitude towards life which says that no one makes any awards to me. I must grab everything and hold it against all odds. I must lift myself by my own bootstraps. I dare not depend upon any context in which I'm operating. If I lose my hold on my self-confidence, nothing else is left. And this is very difficult, isn't it, when you see circumstances moving in your direction that undermine this. I remember reading a novel many years ago about two outlaw bands that met high up in the Pyrenees on a pass between Spain and the other country. And there wasn't room enough for the two outlaw bands to fight each other, so they decided that the two leaders of the outlaw bands would fight. And the rest of the outlaws became cheering section. Now, one man was rather short in stature, wiry, elastic. The other man was big and strong and had an overweening confidence in his ability to crush this little man. And the fight was on. Then the novelist describes something that is, I wish I had the power to picture it to you as I lived it, as I read it. The strong man found suddenly, apparently, or slowly, I guess that's more accurately stated, that his strength was weakening, that his right arm did not respond to the order of his mind. That his left arm just didn't do it. And all of his life, his whole sense of private morale was contingent upon the possession of a strong body that obeyed him. And the novelist describes the panic, the slow evolving of panic in his face as he collapsed because the little man had a hidden dagger, rapier, I believe, or whatever it's called, and he stuck him in a vital place, and as he bled slowly to death, this was happening, but he didn't know that he'd been stuck. The only thing he knew was that his self-confidence was going because his body no longer obeyed him. Now, all of this means, and I must stop, that we are under obligation to achieve and maintain personal stability if we would grow meaningfully into life. We are to select those bases for our stability that will be able to transcend the vicissitudes of fortune and the accidents of life. And this means that an individual stands within the web, as it were, of his life, and he broods
over his total behavior, watching what he does as his stability, sense of personal stability shifts from this thing to that thing. And all the time, if he be wise and sensitive, he is assessing the grounds of his stability, widening these grounds, pulling it back, relenting, moving ahead, juggling with his environment, externally as it were, to find the area which even temporarily will yield to him an increasing sense of morale. But ultimately, a man discovers that the only true basis for stability has to have in it that which is so universal in character that it does not know any age, any classification, any creed, any particular faith, any particular altar, but that which binds and holds for himself and for all mankind. Now, in my thought, this is the function of religion. And any religion that is projected on a basis that is less than that cannot possibly abide. So the prophet says, a curse on him who relies on man, who depends upon mere human aid, for he is like some desert scrub that never thrives, set in a solitary place in the steppes. But happy is he who relies on God, who has God for his confidence. For he is like a tree planted beside a stream, sending his roots down to the water. His leaves are always green. He goes on bearing fruit when all around him is barren, and he looks out on life with quiet eyes. I must find that which is big enough to absolve me from the limited, narrow bases for my stability. Big enough. To hold against all the tensions of my life and my age and my generation, my period in history. And if I do, then I will be able to stand anything that life can do to me. And if I have not found this, then it may be that the storm will carry me down. But if I'm searching with all of my passionate endeavor, I will go down to my grave with a shout. And this is man's destiny.
Walk beside us, O God.
So runs my dream. But what am I, an infant crying in the night? An infant crying for the light, with no language but a cry.